This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This is another special episode, two in a row deviating from our usual format where we look at recent aviation news and talk with an industry guest. This episode is a roundtable discussion with a group of Airplane Geeks co-hosts and contributors. It's coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 635 of the show that we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and with me this episode is first David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian and military aviation expert.
Happy New Year, everyone. Thank God 2020 is gone, and hopefully we're looking forward to a good 2021. Maybe we won't talk about things like 737s this year.
Well, no guarantees. Also with us is Max Trescott. He's host of Aviation News Talk podcast. He's also a national CFI of the year. And of course, he's an expert on the Cirrus aircraft.
And he's still grounded, stuck at home and not flying right now. But we were just talking a moment ago about how COVID levels are high, especially in California. So I'm just hunkered down here.
Very good. Well, hopefully that'll change soon. I'm not sure what soon is. In the coming months, I guess. But also joining us is Rob Mark. He's senior editor of Flying Magazine, and he also publishes the Jetwine blog.
Hey, good evening to everybody. And it's so nice to join all these folks. There's a bunch of us here tonight.
We have a crowd, right. We're just getting started. Just getting started, because also with us is Brian Coleman. He's our former associate producer and co-host. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Max. And everyone else, looking forward to the first show of 21 and hopefully many more this year.
Yes. And also to help us with that is our main man, Micah.
Hello from the cold Northeast. It is so nice to be with you guys and see everyone. It's been a long time and Happy New Year.
Also with us is Airplane Geeks reporter at large, Launchpad Marzari, fresh from the from flying across the pond.
Yeah, and to get us and to get myself psyched up for this year, I'm talking to you from inside my airplane. It's in a hangar, but it's still, you know, it's the Airplane Geek. So I'm in the airplane.
Very good. No better place to be. Also joining us is, well, he's the Av Geek's Av Geek, Isaac Alexander. Hey, Isaac.
Salutations to you all from very, very wet Seattle, living up to its name this past month.
All right. Well, this is a little bit different format, as you can tell, just by the number of folks here. And we're going to have kind of a roundtable discussion this episode. We're going to look back on 2020 and think about, well, the positive aviation stories from a year that we'd all like to forget. Certainly in 2020, we talked about a lot of bad news. There was so much of it. But instead, this episode, we're going to try to focus on the good things that happened in 2020.
What were those again?
Well, we're going to find out in a minute. Maybe this will be a really short podcast.
Okay, just checking. Just checking.
And if we're feeling really frisky, we might try and even forecast some of the good news we expect in 2021. That might be difficult, but we'll try. So why don't we jump right in? And I'm gonna ask Micah to tell us a little bit about a story that he saw, something about some World War II letters. Micah, what is this?
Well, I was reading the paper on New Year's Eve, so it was here was 2021 in the Portland Press Herald, and there was a front page story about this woman, an author named Loretto Thompson, who has 500 letters that she found that her father wrote during his service in the Army Air Corps. And she was able to trace, she knew all about his service flying as a tail gunner in a B-17. And she knew that he was, they had crashed after the war. There was some engine outage in the B-17 and they crashed into the English Channel. And the captain of the aircraft, a captain named Roger Sundin, happens to live in Portland, Maine, in a home for the aged. And she was able to track him down and talk to him. And she knew his name for years and years and years and just found him. And apparently is writing a book about him and her father.
You know, it's always nice when folks can reconnect, you know, or connect in those kinds of ways. And then do something like in this case, write a book that allows them to share it with the rest of us. It's great stuff.
I read that story and it just, like I said, it brought tears to my eyes and happy tears. But here he is, Roger Sundin is 97 years old, remembers the situation, remembers her father who had passed quite some time ago. And it was 17 days after the war that this crash took place. But and everybody ended up surviving because of what this pilot did. Just amazing.
Great stuff. Isaac, you posted some, a short list in our Slack team, some of the events from 2020, some of the good events from 2020. Is there a favorite amongst them or something that's maybe more significant than the others or just one that you like?
How about we just survive 2021 and not having World War III happen would be the supreme one. as to that list, I tried to pull up that list that, let's see, what did I give for that?
The 777X first flight, for example?
Oh, that was probably, yeah, that would probably be it. That was, for me personally, that was my first ever first flight of a Boeing aircraft ever. I just, you know, living in Seattle, but I moved away for 6 years and then came back. I just had never, you know, attended a first flight of an airframe, a new airframe. And boy, that was a great, I went the day beforehand and that they were supposed to have it. And it was 5 hours standing outside in the rain and drizzle. And it was just a miserable day. And then I had a friend, you know, convince me to go to the next day if they drove. And I did. And I'm so glad I did. I got to see the first flight there, take off with about 500 Boeing employees surrounding me and everybody cheering it on. And then later that day, I got to see it land at Boeing Field after roughly, I think, a 3-hour flight over Washington State. So for me personally, that was probably the highlight, aviation highlight of the year. The second one for me would have been the seeing the largest electric powered aircraft take off, and that was in Moses Lake, seeing Magnax, who you've had a former guest here on the show, with Aerotech, they launched flew a Cessna Grand Caravan electrically powered, and really extremely quiet motor, but you know, took off like a regular airplane, flew around like a regular airplane, all good. So those two for me, that would have been the two highlights.
Did you happen to see the wingtips fold up on the 777?
Yes, and it's really quick. As soon as it lands, Boeing has it set up so it automatically, once it reaches a certain ground speed, let's just say, I don't know for sure, let's just say 60 miles per hour, then it trips it to automatically go up.
And I like this one on your list, a Garmin Autoland feature, which is on the Vision Jet and two other aircraft. Now, I have a client locally who has it, and the problem is we can't test it. There is no way to test it except to be in an emergency and press that button. But it's just a fantastic feature, and I'm sure that's going to lead to, you know, even more automation in the future.
Yeah, maybe for we talked about that, I recall, but for those who may not have heard us discuss it. Max, maybe tell the audience a little bit about just exactly what that is.
Well, essentially there's a button on the roof of the Cirrus Vision Jet that can be reached easily by passengers or even by any of the pilots. And when you push it, it starts making announcements both in the cockpit for passengers as to, you know, what's going to happen next. It makes announcements on ATC frequencies to let them know that the aircraft is now going to be landing automatically. It evaluates the weather in the area, the airports in the area, and then it makes a judgment as to what would be the best airport to go land at. And then using GPS, it flies an approach to the runway, including, you know, deploying flaps and landing gear and all those kinds of things. And then it touches down reasonably lightly on the runway, and then it applies the brakes and stops the aircraft right there on the runway. So it's really just an amazing feature that is kind of a last ditch thing. You know, in the past when pilots are incapacitated, that was a really bad scenario that you couldn't easily recover from. Here, pilot's incapacitated, passenger pushes a button, and everybody lives.
Yeah. But Max T, on the Vision Jet, it's the second to last thing you do, isn't it?
You're right. There is the parachute, which is also an option.
So I'm surprised. So there's no test procedure on the ground that you do before the first flight kind of test to see if the system works? I mean, that would really be a bummer if you had the thing in the airplane and then you need it and it says, I'm sorry, you know, I'm unavailable at the moment.
You raise an interesting point. I haven't seen the pre-flight checklist for an airplane that has this. There might be something that you do. Certainly, if you were doing an airliner with Autoland, there's a very complex pre-flight check that's required for those systems. Those, I think, usually are based on landing in ILSs, so it's a totally different system.
With Rob, I'm more scared it would be like a Cirrus subscription and say, your subscription is run out at this time.
Max T, is Cirrus, do you know if the manufacturer plans to do more testing? As you said, you wish you could do the testing, but you're not allowed to. Is the manufacturer looking to do more?
Well, I know that in order to get it certified, they did a lot of testing ahead of time. So, yes, they have used the system. And Garmin had, I think, more than 1,000 different tests of it under the development period, which ran 3 to 4 years easily. So, yeah, there's been a whole lot of testing which has been done. It's just that pilots aren't allowed to push the button to test it.
Is that is it going to remain that way forever, or is that a restriction that will eventually be lifted?
Well, if we're going to be prognosticating, I can't even say that word. If we're going to predict the future, if we're going to predict the future, I would say that there will probably be some version of the system, and it might not be called Autoland, but I'm thinking that somewhere in the next 10 plus years, we may see a feature that allows pilots to use that to land the airplane automatically. But right now, it's really conceived just as an emergency type procedure.
Then everyone could become like an Airbus pilot and just press the Autoland button.
It's kind of like the ultimate automation, isn't it?
Yeah. We were talking about that last night, Max, on Isaac's get-together about the fact that the Navy is trying to get away with training new pilots without carrier qualifying them anymore. And I just thought that was the wackiest thing I'd ever heard. And they say that they won't need to do it because the automation is so good. It won't do a complete auto land, but it'll give them such great guidance that they don't need to even qualify on the carrier until some later date if they need it. And I was just really surprised about that.
I think one of the stories from last year, well, multiple stories, is concerning electric flight. And I think we saw lots of developments. We saw lots of different companies becoming involved, some with products now and others still developing or moving in that direction. But I think that will turn out to be a good story from 2020 and something in 2021 that I think we can look forward to.
Max, I would go further, not just say electrical, but hydrogen was the big thing. Airbus made that huge announcement, I want to say in June, that they're going to develop a family of three different aircraft that are going to be powered by hydrogen. And then there's quite a few different startups in Europe that are pushing the hydrogen energy. I think Zero-G1 is the big one out of the UK. They actually had a successful test flight this fall on it. And there's a couple other ones as well. And Europe is kind of ahead on that is because they've had the flight shaming movement in Europe that, trying to get wean the aviation industry as well as the general, general vehicle industry off of fossil fuels and to a cleaner energy.
Well, Europe is way ahead on it for another reason, because they've been working with hydrogen for a much longer time. I mean, look at the Zeppelin company, for example.
Yeah. That's
referencing the Hindenburg.
Yes, yes. Of course, yeah.
But that's an interesting point, Micah, because I know I'm showing my ignorance of the science, but I mean, I thought hydrogen was so volatile. Is it more volatile than, say, Jet A? Or how do they deal with that?
It's more volatile than Jet A, but not necessarily more volatile than gasoline when it comes right down to it, because the fumes from gasoline will catch just as easily as the fumes from hydrogen. It's not as energy dense as gasoline, which is one of the problems with it. Energy density is one of the big issues with all these new trials of different kind of fuel systems.
And when stored in a liquid form, it's actually fairly safe.
Right. That's what I was going to say, Launchpad, is that, the containment strategy is part of the conversation of hydrogen-powered aircraft, right? It's relatively easy to bring it on board in compressed form in tanks, but that density, that energy density is not great. There's a lot of volume there, even when you compress it. But as you say, Launchpad, if you start talking about liquid hydrogen, then you can pack a lot more energy into a smaller physical space. But the containment vessel requirements are just, enormously more difficult. And then there's the whole issue of the delivery system, the logistics system. How do you get hydrogen to the airplane? And also the manufacturing of the hydrogen, right? We don't have a very high capacity right now for creating hydrogen.
And isn't there an issue with the cold storage of the hydrogen as well? And if you're in a super cold vessel, then you have the shedding of the ice or frost that develops on the outside.
Hmm. Yeah, Brian, that sounds like I can envision that, certainly. So, it's not to say that these are issues that can't be resolved, but, they're not all resolved right now. Rob, how about you? I know you found a list of 12 wild things that happened in 2020 in CNN, but anything from there or any others that kind of tickle your fancy?
I kind of like the flights to nowhere. Those were events where people would just say, I just want to get away. And they get to go home the same night because the airlines were, I don't think they're really doing this anymore, but they were doing it. And just file to, go look at the Rockies from 25,000 feet or something like that, or up in the Northwest, and just give people a chance to see something away from home because people were feeling so cooped up. But that was early on. I think those were in April or May or something like that. And now, of course, that we're all kind of duct taped into our homes. It seems to have disappeared.
Rob, they're still fairly popular in Asia.
Yeah. Are they really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not know that. So again, I'm sorry that Binet's not here because every time I look, I see that she's traveling someplace else, and she's braver than I am. I'm just not much of a traveler these days until I get my shots. Luckily, the magazine has been very patient with me, and our editor's been going. She's been going all over. I mean, it doesn't bother her. She just gets on an airplane and goes. And I said, not me.
So, Rob, I can help you out. I'm happy to shoot you. I mean, you want some shots?
Yeah. There you go. All right. I thought they meant shots.
Is there a line forming? Where do I get in the line?
Yeah. Remember shots and beers? That's another story. One I did like. Oh, go ahead, Isaac. You were going to say something.
Oh yeah, your boss actually came to my home airport.
I know. I saw that, and she ran into the guys from the museum. I cannot remember their names, but who's the director of the museum?
Matt.
Matt. That's who
you
right.
met. You met Matt, and you met the PR director Ted.
That's right. Okay. Because Julie said, "Oh, they said hi." And I said, I think I was out there years ago when I was a child, but that was another story. But the only other one that I thought was interesting was the A350 story about the auto takeoff system on the A350. I didn't know much about that. So, Isaac, I can see your eyes are going. You probably know more about it than I do.
Well, not much. I would defer to the pilots here on this. on this. But yeah, that was a big announcement when it came out. I believe that was in June, July timeframe when they released that information. And anything to automate the process. You know, we have so much data collection anymore. That's all the tech industry has been here in the last 20 years. It's just about accumulating data and trying to monetize it or try to improve it to make things more safe. And this is one of the culminations of what Airbus has been trying to develop.
So now we have airplanes that can take off by themselves, and we have airplanes that can land by themselves. That doesn't leave much left to automate, does it?
Well, they still don't serve drinks by themselves, right? I mean, I think there's still.
Although it really seemed like in 2020, there were an awful lot more stories of people who were leaving the plane by themselves. Going out through the emergency exits. Is it just me, or did that happen a lot more this past year than any other time?
I can think of three times right now that happened. The first one, I believe, was in Ukraine when someone walked on the wing of a 737. Then the most recent one was the guy that jumped the fence in Las Vegas and then climbed up on board on the exterior of a 737. Alaska Airlines.
How does he do that?
I want to know that too. How do you get up on that?
They shut down the engine, and he had to have gone in through the.
Yeah,
through
that's the only thing I can think of is climbing.
That is exactly what happened there.
Now, was that the most recent, or was the one where the passenger on the two passengers and the dog on JetBlue?
Yeah, and the dog,
decided the one passenger said, "I can't sit down, I'll have a panic attack." And then he ended up opening up the emergency exit, and he and his dog and his companion went down the slide.
But let's just say this happened the same week. <He done.
laughs> It was pretty close.
Yes.
I think it's fair to say that there have been some mental issues this past year. Hopefully this will
No, not really. Not really. Just the last 4 years.
Yeah. All right. Careful.
By the way, at the very end of this article, Rob, there's one story here that I had not heard, which I think is really interesting. It says, "And finally, in December, Nepali airline Buddha Air brought some bad karma on itself when it flew passengers to the wrong airport some 250 miles from the intended destination." I mean, I think we've all heard of stories where, you know, pilots accidentally land at the airport that's 5 miles away that looks just like the other airport they're supposed to land at. But I don't know how you could possibly land 250 miles away at the wrong airport. You have to be totally asleep in the cockpit to do that.
Wow. No. Actually, the captain had a pretty great comeback when he said, "We're pretty close." It is scary.
Is this the point where I'm supposed to say I've seen the lights go out in Texas?
They have. We have just witnessed.
My hangar lights just went out. I got to go turn them back on. Hang on.
All right, you go do that.
It's completely dark there with that.
I remember that song.
He's got a flashlight with him.
Lights went out. Technical difficulties.
Okay. Well, anyway.
All right. Another item I think that was significant was the Airbus A220 line in Alabama opened up, started production, delivered an aircraft.
Yeah, JetBlue took delivery, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is correct. And then conversely, along with that, is that they finally opened up the FlightWorks or Airbus FlightWorks, which is what their tour center. So if you wanted to take a tour of the factory there in Mobile, Alabama, you would go there. It's similar. Call FlightWorks Alabama similar to the Future of Flight in at Payne Field in Everett, Washington, which is the jumping off point to take the Boeing factory tour. It's a similar concept. Now, right now, the FlightWorks is only touring the 320 line. Or 320 or 321 line. It does not yet include the 220 line. And they haven't stated at all as to when they would start that. But they have done at least two public tours already. And, once we're past the pandemic, I imagine they'll be ready to do, 7-day-a-week operations.
And Isaac, in order to see the 787, is everyone going to have to go to South Carolina now for that tour? Or...
There will be no viewing of South Carolina because Boeing has not stated at all that they will be offering public tours at that venue. Boeing is the future flight here in Washington State has been closed, along with all museums here in the state, regardless of being in aerospace, have been closed or have been for the most part closed this entire year. As to the 787 line, kind of a bad news from here. We're losing that that line, and it's going to be coming up even faster. I think March will be the last delivery of it, the last one to come off the line in late February, and then everything is going to be moved down to for that 787 line down to North Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah. So then, with the winding down of the 747, they're just going to build 777s there, because that's an awful lot of hangar space for it.
Yeah, 777s and the 767. They will have to adjust those two the two towers that you go into to observe inside the hangar. They're going to adjust it. They're probably going to be going to different towers, more in the center towers to go in. Why? Because they don't really allow you to view the 767 line because it's partially a Department of Defense line from a security standpoint. Pentagon doesn't want you looking at that, the general public. So, it's just going to be the 777 line, and then it'll convert into the 777X line. Not very exciting, just viewing a couple aircraft, considering you have four aircraft types in there building now. So, wow.
Can you imagine someday being able to go into a museum and see things or on a manufacturer's tour? And I just can't even imagine the days when we were able to do things like that.
I've been lucky to walk that factory floor quite a few times, as well as the one in Renton. Looking in the future with Boeing, launching a new aircraft, I believe, along with it, past guests on the show, Richard Abalafia, that Boeing is going to have to launch a new aircraft, whether it's the kind of a 757, 767 replacement or a 737 replacement. They need to do it, and they need to do it quickly. It will not be this year, though. I imagine it's probably going to be next year. So at the end of this decade that we finally get a new aircraft program coming out of Boeing, which we haven't had since the 787 rolled off the line in 2007, 2008 timeframe. It's been a long time.
How about funding it though, Isaac?
I was going to ask the same thing.
yeah, Rob. Boeing doesn't seem like they're in the kind of financial shape that would allow them to make that kind of investment. No. So maybe they've got some other sources of cash that they can dip into? I don't know.
Well, they walked, the big story with Boeing last year was not only just COVID and the 737 MAX, it was also walking away from that Embraer deal acquisition that was supposed to take place in April. And that was, I want to say, what was it, $8 billion? It was under $10 billion, I know that, for cost. But, they saved that money there. And they were able to get private financing from the markets versus having to go to the government for bailout money with all the strings attached that the U.S. government wanted to put into lending the money. So, they're going to have to go into private markets, and then they're going to have to wait for the customers to be more financially healthy, which is your lessors, your Udvar-Hazys out there, as well as your mainstream airlines right now. Boeing's in hot water right now with one of its big customers is Emirates. For the repeated delays of the 777X. Now, you're not having a lot of airlines globally at all clamoring for wide-body aircraft, let alone new aircraft at all, but really they're staying away from wide-body aircraft. We have a lot of whitetails up here now in the Everett of 777s and some Dreamliners as well. So it's an extremely tough market right now moving forward for Boeing. Airbus is having their own difficulties as well, even though they had I would say Airbus made out this year for everything that was thrown at it from the COVID perspective, fantastic. Boeing's got a long road ahead here moving forward.
Well, that was one of my top stories of the year. I mean, I think Boeing has some issues overall for going on, and there's a big downfall with Boeing between what happened with the 737 MAX, which I know we can't get away from, and it's awful, but it's still happening. What happened with still the ongoing issues with the KC-46, the issues that took place with the Starliner, continued issues with the 787. How can you trust this company any longer to buy airplanes from? It's a big issue, and I'm really curious what you think the solution is for that. What everybody thinks the solution is for that.
Well. I would say, the other thing interesting with Boeing is what happens this year. And you're going, why? 20 years ago, Boeing's corporate headquarters moved away from Seattle. And that's still a shockwave. That happened. The lease runs out in Chicago, the Chicago headquarters this year. And the Boeing company, late this fall, had put up their long anchors, the commercial aircraft division's property here in the suburban Seattle area of Renton. That's where their commercial headquarters is at. They put this huge campus up for sale. And they also explored selling off the tower that they their 20-story tower that they lease in Chicago. So, and they have not announced at all as to what the future plans are. John Ostrower, I posed a question of would they come back to Seattle, and he correctly stated, I believe, that I think they will leave Chicago. The question is, where will they end up? And he was saying it's probably likely Washington, D.C., That would follow the steps of most of the your defense companies here in the United States, all leaving, Northrop and Lockheed leaving California for the suburban D.C. Area as well, some of the other defense manufacturers. It's just weird to me that we won World War II with a variety of companies all based here on the West Coast and with less communication skills, yet now into the future, now we have to have every single defense company needs to have their headquarters in D.C. We have all these improvements in communications. I just don't get it. But this is where we're at.
Isaac, do you have any idea how many employees what's the head count in Chicago? Is it a lot?
It's around 400 people.
Okay. That could affect how easy it is to move the headquarters.
Yeah. It's not that big of a deal for movement. The other kind of you bring up employment.
It's far easier than moving the line to South Carolina.
Yeah. Washington State, pretty much since the 1940s, Boeing has been the largest private employer here in the state of Washington. In this last decade, it's kind of hovered around 70,000 people. Well, at the end of this last year, that is no longer the case. Amazon now is the largest private employer in the state of Washington, surpassing Boeing. So what a world we live in.
But, I was going to say something in relation to what Micah was talking about is that people are looking at this from a purely logistical standpoint. How many orders did they lose for the MAX? Will they find a new airplane to replace the MAX? But Boeing has a serious credibility problem that it brought on itself with the help of the FAA over this whole MAX thing. And I think it's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. I kind of agree with Micah. I don't know that they're past that at all.
Well, Rob, yeah, I think it's a little bit more than that because there's also the production issues that they had as well.
Yeah. And it's not just productions in a commercial line. The defense line has had many issues, cost overruns, as well as the space program as well. The tanker issue still being an issue 10 years on since that award has been granted. And the credibility, I will say, with the Boeing leadership right now, since a year ago, Dennis Muilenburg was fired and Dave Calhoun has been the new CEO. He's only publicly talked to when he's gone on TV interviews. It's only been CNBC. And Pat, who was the new Boeing commercial aircraft president that took over for Kevin, he hasn't publicly spoken to the press since he's taken the job, and that's a year and 2 months. The silence is deafening in the public sense from the Boeing company to the public.
Yeah, and that is probably, from a credibility standpoint, that is probably the worst thing that you can do.
Stan Deal, excuse me, it's Stan Deal, who is the new Boeing commercial head.
Yeah.
Well, I think Boeing has got, a number of credibility rebuilding issues, right? Boeing's, or the public perception, or the perception of the public of Boeing is one issue. The relationship with the government, the FAA, and DOT, there needs to be some, rebuilding there. And then the commercial relationships with the airlines and the leasing companies and all. And I don't know, while all three of those are interrelated in many ways, they might really be separate problems, separate issues. that have to be dealt with by Boeing. It's not just, you know, it's not just one audience that they need to rebuild the relationship with. It's several, and that kind of compounding issue makes it particularly difficult.
Yeah, they thought it was going to be the customers that people would not want to fly on the MAX when it came back. I'll bet you, I mean, I think Americans started flying them last week, and I'll bet you there's probably not 10 people on that whole airplane when it flies that even know that it's a MAX.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they ask the question, or they don't even know to ask the question, or they don't care. Or
American is making it very clear about when you book flights is that they make it clear on which aircraft type that you're flying on.
Okay.
So they're making that clear now. Just American. I don't know. Obviously, with Southwest, you know, it's either next generation aircraft, you know, it's 737NGs or it's the MAXes. I don't know if they're going to go with that similar labeling as well as United and Alaska once they start flying theirs as well. Alaska has not received any MAXes yet, so that wasn't – they were affected by it, but they weren't affected by it since they hadn't received any. They will receive theirs later this year.
But Rob, putting COVID aside, are you would you be hesitant in flying on a MAX?
I don't think I would be, and I think I, as much as I don't particularly care for Steve Dixon at FAA, I do agree with him that this thing has probably been looked at six ways from Sunday. I mean, and they caught things that were never caught on, like that thing about the wiring in the tail that was never caught on the original certification. It's probably just, I shouldn't say it that way. I'm sure it's fine. I doubt it would have made it through 2 years of grounding in order to find out that there's some other major flaw with it. But I think just having, again, it was just the way it was handled from day one that Boeing didn't even tell the people that drive this stupid airplane that the MCAS even existed because they thought they didn't need to know about it. It just wasn't that important. Again, that's that credibility issue, at least from the operational side. You know, people work for Southwest or American or United or Alaska or whatever, and they say, look, today you're driving a MAX. They go, okay. I mean, there's not a whole lot they can really do about it unless they want to look for work somewhere else. But again, credibility for a huge company like this, I mean, look at the reputation they had for, oh, I don't know, 100 years. And in 6 months, they trashed the damn thing. And everybody's kind of doing what we're doing in some political circles, going, if I just don't see it, if I don't address it, people won't notice that this thing is here. I think that's their bigger issue than the logistical part. As I said earlier, I think the problem is really going to be how they're going to convince all these potential customers that even if they do build a new airplane, how do we know you're going to get this one right?
People will ask that question for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and Boeing's a little short on cash these days, too, although I'm sure their insurance, would they lose on the MAX so far, $20 billion or $22 billion? I don't know how much insurance covered any of that, or maybe none of it. I don't know, but I'm just saying their savings account is probably a little low at this point in time.
I agree. Well, sure. I would fly the airplane. I think it's they've looked at it with a microscope. It's probably the safest airplane in the sky now. You talk about the pilots not knowing what MCAS was before. Every passenger now knows what MCAS is. We've gone from one extreme to the other. Excellent. So, yeah, I think it's a safe airplane. I have no qualms at all about getting on a 737 MAX. And by the way, I like the name. So,
and if you look at it historically, I mean, you can see this thing's happened before. It happened with the Comet. You know, and the Comet became a very successful aircraft. Everybody forgot about the issues. It happened with the DC-10. Never really been a problem. I believe it was the A320 that crashed at an air show when it first.
That is correct.
You know, so it happened with the A320, and people tend, the public doesn't remember these things necessarily. It's just the reputation of Boeing that really has me flustered, because here's the organization that really ushered in the big jet age, the B-47, the B-52, the 707, and it's just not the reputation that it once had. It's not a company. The last two aircraft, the 787 and the MAX, certainly some major issues. And I think if they have any problems with the 777X, we've got real cause for concern here. Plus the KC-46 and the Starliners we talked about before. And I'm just hoping that they can pull it around and get it back together at some point or another.
Yeah. As the last part of this, I want to remind everybody here, this isn't the 737's first problem. Everybody remember hard rudder over?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, crash in Pittsburgh there many years ago.
Yeah, because the 737's had that hard rudder problem that had to be fixed. That was a actual design problem.
Yeah, nobody likes to say it this way, but I will. People like to assume that when an aircraft enters service, it's perfect. Everything, it's safe. It's totally safe and perfect. But the reality is, like any other machine that is designed and built by human beings, if you're really, really good at it, it's almost perfect. And over time becomes more perfect. I won't even call them flaws, but issues come to light that weren't known before, and they get corrected, and sometimes there's retrofits, sometimes it just goes into future production models. But it's an iterative process of making the device increasingly safe. So I think, I agree with what some of you guys are saying, in that the 737 MAX got, 20 years, maybe 10 years at least, worth of advanced scrutiny, in a 2-year period, or maybe a 12-month period or something. I'm not concerned about flying on that airplane at all.
Well, we know Boeing's never going to make any money on it.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Okay, I'll fly on it if I'm we can stop talking about it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, let's agree with tankers. Dave.
In fact, David, so I think one of the big stories is it's kind of a drone story. And at the very end of December 2020, the FAA issued two final rules. One is for the remote identification of unmanned aircraft or drones, and the other is the final rule for flight over people. But for this audience, I mean, we talk about, David and I talk about this a lot on the UAV Digest. But for this audience, I think the remote ID final rule is significant, and it really impacts the ability going forward of integrating drones into the national airspace system. So I know, David, you want to talk about remote ID just a little bit and how it doesn't include ADS-B?
I guess for general thing is it doesn't include ADS-B. It's going to be either Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, and it is required to get transmitted from the drone to a personal device, either an iPad or an iPhone. And so they're not going to be flooding the ADS-B universe with drone information. The other interesting thing is there's really two types of transponder that they're setting up for the drones. One is it's fitted inside the drone in this specific. The other one will be an attachment box that you can attach to a drone. Now, all of these are 18 months out. The other interesting thing was a area designed for non-identifiable aircraft areas that the FAA is setting up. Basically, clubs, Academy of Aeronautics clubs or organizations or schools that are doing educational programs will not require remote ID, but they're also not able to fly beyond visual line of sight. So it was sort of a compromise. But I guess for the biggest piece of technology is the fact that the coming and going of ADS-B is not going to affect drones and not going to affect the general aviation population. It's a good compromise. It looks like the FAA did listen to the drone population in their comments, because the proposed rules were slightly different from the final rules, but we haven't really seen any negative feedback on the final ruling. So that's a good sign. So we're moving forward a little bit closer to drone delivery, et cetera.
Although there are some stories just very recently, David, about Wing, you know, under Alphabet, which has Google, having some issues with the remote ID final rule affecting or impacting privacy issues. And I mean, it sounded, I haven't really delved into it, but it sounds a lot like how, you know, corporate aircraft, say, for example, are sometimes not identified because, you know, you'd be able to tell, you know, where are they flying and how come this company is flying to Muncie, Indiana all the time and what's in Muncie, Indiana and what that, you know, all of that kind of thing. And so I guess they're concerned about a similar sort of situation occurring with drones, with remote ID and being able to figure out things about what someone is doing. And I don't know. We'll have to look at that before the next episode, David.
Absolutely. Privacy issues are always going to be an issue. And, you know, like John Ostauer has done in the past, he has picked the vice presidential candidate by what aircraft was flying from what airport to D.C., et cetera. So it's definitely an interesting aspect. I mean, the flights over people was pretty self-explanatory. And the other thing is, if you have your Type 107, you're going to need updated certifications. So you're going to, and they've changed the amount of time that you will have before you are recertified as a drone pilot, Rob. So we'll just leave it at that.
And you know, there was a really nice cutout that they did for the RC clubs. And when I first looked at this, I thought, oh no, does that mean all of us who have, you know, a bunch of RC planes have to put a remote identity into each of them, which is silly because, you know, you hang out at the same field. It's clearly identified. You're not flying them randomly down the streets of Manhattan. And so basically every RC club in America is now going to apply to have their little field designated as an area where they don't have to use remote ID. And that is fantastic. I mean, I think that it's nice to see that RC didn't get dragged into regulations intended strictly for drones.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, no, Max T, we both know someone who was recently flying, and without mentioning their name, you know, landed at a California airport who either, he could say, ran into a drone or a drone ran into his plane on final. So actually, I think knowing who that
– He was around 3,000 feet when he struck that thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was – I mean, it was way higher than it should have been.
Yes, but knowing who that person is, I think I would certainly want to know at that point, right? Because clearly he's operating the drone where it shouldn't have been operated and doesn't seem to be so safe.
But I guess the question is, if it's going to be communicating its ID via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, that's a pretty limited range.
Yeah.
I mean, does that mean I need to be sitting in my airplane with my phone constantly looking for new connections on Wi-Fi or Bluetooth? By the time it acquired it, I would have already hit it.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure that this type of ID is really helpful for aircraft for avoiding drones. I think it's great for authorities for identifying drones that are doing nefarious things, but I don't think it really helps pilots avoid them.
That was my question. You know, Bluetooth is good for about 30 feet. Wi-Fi is good if you really push it, maybe 150 feet. How is this going to help identify any kind of UAV that is doing something that it's not supposed to do? The whole purpose is to be able to identify these things. It seems to be pretty useless to me.
The original proposal included that. In other words, the drone broadcasting some kind of a signal. And then the other scenario allowed in the initial proposal was for the drone to transmit that over the internet. which of course that would make that, if you have a connection, that makes that unlimited range, right, basically. But there are a lot of places where you'd want to fly where you don't have an internet connection, so that's problematic too. But that dropped out in the final rule. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, these things always have lots of questions. Another aspect of this is that the FAA is not it's a performance-based rule. And the FAA is not telling people, you know, how to implement this, just what the requirements are, which is good. I think we see more of that from the FAA, increasingly so. But yeah, there are, you know, this just came out December 28th, and it's January 4th as we record this. So, you know, lots of questions.
Well, especially if we're talking about if the goal was not to overwhelm the manned aviation ADS-B system. I mean, but UAvionics makes a micro transponder that would fit in any drone that would transmit ADS-B signals back to the ground. Because again, I'm with the other guys here. I thought I heard Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. What the hell good is that going to be? Unless you're near a station, who are they trying to send this information to? That's the part that I didn't get. And as you said, they don't really explain that.
I think they're thinking about, you know, cases where like somebody's drone is buzzing aircraft at the airport. So the airport could find out, could determine, you know, what that drone is and who's operating it.
Well, okay, and let's be specific. This is for small drone operations.
Yes, yes, yes.
This is not okay. We need to recenter that. This is not going to be your package delivery drone. This is for smaller drone operations, and not where you're talking about aircraft that would be intermixing with the larger drones. The ruling hasn't been set yet, but when we get to large package delivery drones, et cetera, they will probably be required to have ADS-B because they will be interacting with in the UAS. This is for the smaller drones in the population. That's why they didn't want to flood air traffic with ADS-B signals from a lot of small drones, because effective in 18 months, all drones that come off the line will have this technology built into them by regulation.
Dave, what's a smaller drone? Is that one of those six rotor things that has a 35 millimeter camera below it? Where's the definition of small, medium, and large?
So it's anything greater than 0.55.
I got to look up the weight.
Yeah, it's anything greater than 0.55 pounds.
Yeah, below 0.55 pounds, the remote ID requirement doesn't exist. It's over 0.55 pounds. Interesting. And we don't want to, you know, we could spend a whole thing talking about
it. We did spend a whole episode talking about it.
Yeah.
I think a good news or story related to drones in this past year is what Max and specifically David, what did you see good for drone shows, drone entertainment shows, promotions this year? Did we see more shows put on or less because of COVID? We had to keep people socially distanced, so we didn't have as many drone shows that we probably could have had. And if the ones you did see, did we see a progression in the use of, you know, BizWang Wow feel for this year? I know probably David will mention the one in Delaware that took place for Joe Biden when in November when he accepted and won the nomination for it. And there was a couple others throughout this summer, you know, notably in Singapore and China had quite a few. Just curious what you guys think, what thought of the drone shows, if you will.
So when you say drone shows, you're not talking about, Isaac, you're not talking about drone conferences, right? You're talking about performances.
Yeah, aerial performances like the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. I forget who the musical, I think it was Lady Gaga that before she jumped into the stadium on a bungee cord or whatever, there was a drone. Intel did a light show outside for that, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. They're getting pretty pretty good, pretty interesting, pretty sophisticated. Some people have in the past wondered if they might eventually replace fireworks.
I'm one of those.
You know, the wow factor. I think they have a ways to go, but you know, they are really impressive. And when you see what appear to be 3D objects up in the sky rotating and moving and that kind of thing that you can do with a swarm of drones, they're pretty impressive.
The Walmart Christmas show that we put on a link to, on UAV Digest, was pretty good, and they seem to be more drones the more elaborate the things are. So I mean, Biden's one was phenomenal. The Walmart one was fun, but like I said, Google drone light shows. And there's a gazillion movies out there now of various ones.
Yeah, I think we'll be seeing a lot more of those too. All right, let's move on to some other things so we can come back to positive stories from 2020. But first, before that, I just want to mention, or we want to mention, the folks that contributed to this little experiment in podcasting, people who gave donations. As you may have heard us say, we have a donate button on the website, airplanegeeks.com. It's a PayPal donate button. And so we just want to thank those who donated in 2020. And we want to thank Mark, Ed, Douglas, Michael, or Mike, Ted, Greg, thank you, Greg, Patrick, Peter, Matthew, Philip, Jennifer, and Nathan. And we want to thank those folks for contributing. It kind of costs a lot of money, more than you might think to produce this, between the media hosting file, the website. I just renewed our, you know, the website, the WordPress blog where we publish these. I think I got a 3-year renewal, just, you know, in case I get hit by a bus or something, Airplane Geeks wouldn't die. But that was almost $500 right there.
Wow. Payment for talent.
Yeah.
And then there's Rob's salary. I mean, that adds up.
Yeah. Quite a bit. Yeah. Rob's salary. We also invested in quite a lot of promotional material, T-shirts and buttons and magnets and things, at the beginning of the year in anticipation of Sun and Fun and Oshkosh. So that was a big expense, which we, you know, we still have the product. So I'm hoping that we can give that stuff away next year. Well, this year, 2021.
Hopefully starting in June and down in Washington, D.C.
Hopefully starting in April at Sun and Fun in Lakeland, Florida. Yeah, that's scheduled. We'll see what happens. A lot of events have already been canceled for next year, especially the ones at the first part of the year. But in any event, really want to thank those who did contribute. If you're able, it really helps pay for some of the expenses. Not all of them, but at least some of them, and that's very helpful. So thanks to those who did that.
And, you know, I'd like to say, if it's okay with you, Max, and maybe Brian will want to say something about this as well, but, you know, there are some podcasts that you listen to, some great podcasts, people that I know and love, that ask for donations regularly, and that's perfectly fine. There's no problem with that. And we take a different route on that, and we don't ask regularly. But it is something that we truly appreciate. We don't mention the donors often enough, and we really do want to thank you for it. And all you have to do is log on to airplanegeeks.com and you'll see the donate button if you do want to help us out, and we would be greatly appreciated. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Brian.
No, I completely agree. The show's always been very unobtrusive over unobtrusive might not be the right word, but we've been restrained in asking for money, and it's definitely appreciated because there are lots of expenses in doing the show.
Well, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention that an easy way to donate is send the money to me and I will make sure it gets to the right location eventually.
Eventually.
Well, and Rob's salary was doubled this year.
Yeah, twice zero.
Trescott, see, what you did was you got it wrong. It wasn't Matt Rob's salary. It's Rob's legal fees.
Yeah. Launchpad, I think we're getting some feedback on your end. Not positive, but I think so.
Yeah, I had to change to the car. Let me mute my mic.
Yeah, I see that you're not in your airplane any longer.
What is this? Trains, planes, automobiles?
Yeah,
what are
what's
you doing
next?
Here, Launchpad?
Right.
Yeah, I was running out of juice in the plane, and I didn't want to fire up the master battery, so I had to move out to the car and plug the phone into the car, and now the phone's using the car audio.
Guys. He's gonna exceed the speed of light here. Now, remember, Launchpad, the last time you got past about 95 when I was with you, and I said, we can't do that. So he likes it more at like 40. It's better at 40.
I'm surprised he didn't start the airplane to get the electricity.
In the hangar, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's do a little bit of what's up with the geeks. I'll kick it off. I'll let you guys think about what you have going on. A few items. I just wanted to mention eatattheairport.com. That's been rolling along. Actually, even this year, last year, 2020, we had a lot of submissions, even though a lot of people weren't flying and weren't going to airports or supporting the eating establishments there. But eatattheairport.com is still going. That one actually doesn't cost us any. There's no incremental cost to us on that one. We're talking about, cost of doing the show. The event calendar, avgeekfests.com, that does kind of cost a lot because we have to pay for some software that does the calendaring. So we didn't use it much. I mean, we being the community in 2020 because there really weren't any events to attend. So if, or not if, but as you encounter aviation-related events, it could be air shows, it could be conferences, it could be seminars or, whatever it is, club meetings, anything like that, really. Take a look at avgeekfests.com and you can, submit the event. And I think we'll give it one more year. And if it, gets a significant amount of use, we'll keep that going. If not, then we'll just, we'll just cut it and save some money.
I didn't even know what this existed.
Well, that's because you're not around much.
Well, but then you should tell people.
Nobody's good looking. Yes, that's why we keep him around.
I didn't know. I didn't get the memo.
It would make a great article in Flying Magazine,
Things Rob didn't know. That could be a series.
That could be a dictionary.
Yeah, oh my God. Number of times I hear, I didn't, when were you going to tell me that?
The weekly newsletter.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
In our Slack team, we've been having a conversation about challenge coins. Now, probably most of you know what challenge coins are. We won't go into it, deeply here, but, Google it and you'll figure out what a challenge coin is. So this has come up in the past from time to time, creating an Airplane Geeks challenge coin. So we're thinking about doing that. Now, we need some design ideas. So if you know what a challenge coin is and you're not in our Slack team, if you want to send us some thoughts on what the content could be. All right, an easy one is on one side would be the Airplane Geeks logo, right? You have to have that. But on the obverse side, what would make some good elements in the design? Someone suggested in the Slack team there you could have a commercial airplane, a GA airplane, and a military airplane to sort of indicate the broad scope of this podcast. So that was, that's an interesting idea. But anything else or other ideas would be appreciated. Send them to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. If you've got some graphic skills and you even want to mock up a couple, that would be great. But if you just have ideas, that's fine too.
I got an idea. How about David's profile on the backside there?
Should we have him falling asleep at the mic?
Well, no. I'm just thinking, you look at all the coinage that's made. There's always some famous person, somebody on the nickels, somebody on the dime. So we need David's profile here on the side of the coin.
I just wanted embossed on the back that says, possession of this coin causes all bills to be referred to Rob Mark.
Okay. Something like that. All right. Speaking of Rob, Rob, have you got anything going on these days of interest?
I'm learning to be, I want to be Max when I grow up.
Which
I mean,
one?
You, Max. Max East. Sorry.
Ooh.
I
want to be Max West.
To Max West. So there's no point in worrying about that. He's my little brother, so he has to do what I tell him all the time anyhow. But no, right. I'm actually, I've been taking some time, spending some time, I should say, in this last couple of months learning Adobe Audition and really trying to get familiar with it because I said, you know what? I know kind of how you do what you do. You do this and run it through that and equalize and graphical, whatever it is. And I said, you know, I want to know what's going on and what affects what. And so it's actually been very interesting how much, again, I didn't get the memo on, but it's, you know, again, it's been eye-opening. So I hope I have the chance to use it, use these new skills one of these days. And I can give you a resume soon if you want one. Anybody. You
know. So are you volunteering to do the editing in the future? That's a great idea, Rob. I love it. Thank you, Rob.
David, all in favor, that? Say aye.
David, I don't think I said that.
There's a motion on the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Yeah. Okay. Well, I Rob's the new editor raise. For the podcast.
No, but it's really, it's interesting to... But, you know, and let me just ask you, Max, because, I mean, you do some, and I know Max T does some, and I'm sure Isaac does some. And but when you learned all of these tools, did you learn with a through a book, or are you the kind of person that just said, I've got this thing, and I'll just start clicking buttons to see what it does, and that's kind of how I learn? I'm just curious.
Well, it's mostly self-taught, but it's not as random as just clicking a button and, you know, seeing what happens next.
Really? Because that's what they said. This is so simple, even a baby could do it. And
it's not.
I'm just, you know, it's anyway. Not. No, but it is, guys, as we were talking about when you were talking about donations, it's a lot more work to make this show sound the way that it does than you would believe. And that's always been a hallmark of Airplane Geeks, the number of times I would see comments posted about the quality of the production. And all you need to do is listen to some of the other, I don't mean aviation podcasts necessarily, but just podcasts in general. And you hear some that are just, they're awful. The content might be interesting somewhere, but they're just really so poorly produced that they're absolutely no fun to listen to.
Yeah, they hurt your ears. Yeah, that's my rule. You know, if my ears hurt, I don't listen to that podcast. Audio quality is really important.
So it's kind of ironic that that we're having this conversation as we're recording this over Zoom, which is going to produce a lower audio quality final product than would otherwise be the case. But what we normally use is limited to four participants. And so in order to do this with a group like this, you know, Zoom was kind of the choice. But so we'll see how it sounds at the end. It's not going to sound the same, I'll tell you.
Well, there's a second problem, too. And you mentioned it, but you didn't quite highlight it. The other problem is that it's a group like this.
Yeah. Always a challenge. All right. Just one quick thing. Isaac, you had said before we started recording, you had a time to punch out. Are you still?
Yeah.
Are we approaching that?
I still go. If you want me to go ahead right now and stuff and say what's on doc for me, I yes. can do that right now if you wish.
Please.
Okay. Yes, actually, well, a year ago, I had Rob Mark actually fly out from Chicago out to Seattle for my little event that I run annually. Is the Seattle Aerospace Barbecue. And traditionally right now, that would have been this coming Saturday would be the event. Obviously, because of COVID, that got pushed off. So as of right now, the event will be July 31st, which is the last Saturday of July 2021. And June 1st will be the go, no-go date. If, you know, because of the pandemic, if it's still unsafe to meet, we will not have a 2021 edition. I am fine, you know, I'm fine with doing it, but I want it, and fine not doing it. I want people to be safe when they do it. So,
isn't that kinda, Oshkosh?
Yes, it's during Oshkosh. It's also for, you know, it's the Seafair. We are celebrations. There are other air shows during that weekend too, David, that happened throughout the United States. But yes, that is during Oshkosh. But that, you know, it's pushed out that far is because that's when hopefully more of the majority of the population will be in the United States will be vaccinated. And I'm not planning to fly myself until, I'm vaccinated. And because I would desperately back in, you know, it's been a long time since September of 2019. I was able to see Brian in person when we both attended Dorkfest. And then you guys had Brett Snyder on last month talking about that. And I desperately wanted to attend that. And then I would ask that people keep their calendar open for January 8th, Saturday, 2022. Hopefully I can have more news about that, but I'm planning a big event that's going to be taking a one-day event that's going to be taking place in Seattle. And I can't say more right now until the paperwork is signed, but just keep that on. If you're willing to travel and you're vaccinated and feel safe and want to get energized by being around other aerospace people, that's the date for something to come to Seattle for.
So I should buy a ticket is what you're saying.
Yes, Brian, if you wish to. Yes.
I just actually have one question. Maybe one of you guys can answer, which is cooler, to be a geek or a dork?
Geek.
I think geek, because that's her name. It must be cooler.
Yep. Okay.
And Brett's not here.
All right.
Thank you, Max.
Thanks, Isaac. So are you going to punch out now or?
I'll stay on as long as I can. Okay. You know, I'll stay on and then I'll just log off. So.
Okay. Very good. All right. Who else has got something going on aviation wise or significant? Launchpad, well, we can try your connection. Go ahead.
All right. I apologize for the bad audio, and this will never happen again, I promise. Bad audio. I want to do a shout out to, if you've been listening to the Slack team, is that one, we did a European virtual meetup in between Christmas and New Year for all our European friends. And we even had a surprise special guest. We had Mike and Stefan Strauss, the creators of Chicken Wing Comics, were our guests for our virtual meetup. The other thing that happened to me was, as is my family's tradition, we went to visit when we were going to Christmas Mass, we went to visit the grave of her parents. And she was like, hey, do you want to see my grandparents' grave? It's in the same graveyard in Wiesbaden. So we went over to look at that, and I was looking at it, and I looked over and I went, wait a second, the grave next to us, family plot, says von Richthofen. And sure enough, it was the grave of Manfred von Richthofen, the Red Baron. Oh, and wow. If you're a member of our Slack team, I posted photos in that. So that was kind of an interesting coincidence. And I'm talking up the Slack. Let me throw it to Dave. Dave, tell folks how they can join our Slack team.
You can join our Slack team by sending us an email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And Max or I will send you a link to join the team.
But don't do it too quickly, because if you do, then you're not much of a slacker.
Yeah, we have good times in there. And I think probably most of you heard us talk about it, but it's a closed community. I kind of think of it like Twitter on steroids, but just for this community. You know, there's messages, there's threads, you can post pictures, you can upload files, a variety of different ways to interact with people. You can subscribe to certain channels that are on a different topic. A lot of stuff in there. Airline Pilot Guy show has a Slack team as well, very similar to that. So yeah, if you're interested in just, you know, checking it out, just flip us an email and we'll send you an invite.
Yeah, when it's working.
It's always working.
No, they had their national outage today. Actually, it was a global outage. Yeah, Slack was down for most of the day today globally.
No kidding. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oops.
I guess, I guess I would have found that out. All right. Mike.
So I didn't know you were going to call him Micah, but I could be really fast. I was just going to say that the two events that I'm really looking forward to attending this year is going to be the Great Pacific Air Show, which is in Huntington Beach, and I actually just added that to the calendar. So that's October 1st through 3rd. It's a wonderful outdoor air show right on the beach in Huntington Beach, California. And the other I'm going to try really, really hard, if they have it, is to get over to Dubai and go to the Dubai Air Show.
Oh,
and that is November 14th through 18th. So Carlos from Plane Talking UK and I have been talking about doing that. And then in 22, of course, doing the Farnborough Show again. So really looking forward to that.
That'd be great.
I really hope you make it to Dubai, because that looks, you know, Dubai on the calendar has perfectly almost escaped all of the pandemic that has happened. You know, Singapore was the one that got hit right beforehand. All the exhibitors pulled out of it. The alcohol in the hotels will be flowing quite a bit, I imagine, to Dubai, because it's a dry country. So you have to, if you're going to drink alcohol in Dubai, you have to be in the hotels. I found that out when I visited there. I hope you're able to do it, Brian. That would be fantastic.
So flasks are frowned upon?
Yes.
yeah, there are some countries where you just really don't want to go against the grain because you will regret it.
Yeah, you do not want to be in public drinking in Islamic nations. They're perfectly fine if you have a big space or your own hotel room at. You can party as your heart's content, but do not go out in public.
As my mother said, I'm too pretty for jail.
Yeah, she did.
Well said, Brian.
You know, I always wanted to say that, Brian, but I thought it would just be, you know,
interpreted
over the top to mention that. But
yeah, I remember when his mom told us that. I was pretty.
Micah, you've got something for us. You made a recording for this episode.
Yeah, it's a little story about actually something about this pandemic that ended up turning out to be good. And the title of it is Fire on the Launch Pad, but it has nothing to do with Apollo 1. So why don't you play it, Max?
All right. Let's see if I can get this to work.
I've often told you about some of my experiences during my 3 years living in Pueblo, Colorado. But this story is new, even to me. Well, not exactly new, but although it happened to me, I really didn't find out about it until March of 2020. It may be my most extraordinary airplane geek story related to my time in Colorado, Steel City. I moved to Pueblo during the late summer of 1984 to take a job at the university. I remember arriving very late on a Friday night. It had taken me 2 days to drive there from Ohio with an overnight stop at the Holiday Inn in Lawrence, Kansas. My first day at work was scheduled to be on Monday, so I figured that arriving on Friday would let me settle into my on-campus apartment, rest for a bit after a long 2-day drive, and prepare for an early start on Monday morning. Apparently, that was not to be. At around 7 a.m. Saturday morning, I was awakened by the phone. It was one of the vice presidents, my boss's boss. "Micah," he said, "we have a bit of an urgent matter we need to talk about. Be in my office in an hour." His office? In an hour? I'd only been to his office one other time, some 3 months before during my interview. I wasn't even sure I'd be able to find his office. Plus, now I was worried. What was the urgent matter that had him telling me to be there on a Saturday morning, 2 days before my scheduled start date? Classes weren't in session, and the place was empty as I took my early August morning cross-campus walk. I managed to find the building, made my way to the right office, and found the VP and my boss there waiting for me. We said our hellos, and they perfunctorily asked me about my drive. Then they brought up the reason for this early Saturday morning meeting. "You remember when you interviewed, we told you about the fire in the dorm?" they asked. "Sure," I said. "It was brought up several times." About 18 months prior to my arrival there, there was a fire in a residence hall that may have been the biggest catastrophe to ever strike the college. People were physically injured, and far more were traumatized. In fact, no one on campus, in town, or in the press could ever speak of the dorm without mentioning the fire, You just couldn't get away from it. They went on. Well, you understand that we know the fire was set. It was definitely arson. And we're pretty sure it was set by one of the residents. Although we have several suspects, we never figured out who did it. Yes, I said, I know. Still wondering why they decided to tell me again at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, 48 hours before my start date. You see, they said, one of the suspects is scheduled to move back into the dorm this year, and we don't know if that should be allowed. On top of that, this suspect is part of your student staff. We thought we should talk about it with you before we made any decisions. I can't even explain the feelings I had when they said that. Questions started racing through my mind that I knew I couldn't ask. For example, if you knew this person was an arson suspect, how did you let them through the interview process to become a staff member? I won't go through all the things I didn't ask. If I had asked them, I'm sure I would have been fired before I even started. But I did ask what the police and fire investigator reports had to say, and could I read them? Then came the shocker. They said they didn't have copies of the reports and had never seen them. Huh? I'm not sure what my face looked like on the outside. I know I was trying to hide my surprise. I tried to slow down before I uttered a sound. After a brief pause, that felt like hours to me, but must have only been a few seconds, I said, "Do you think we can get copies of the reports and read them ourselves? That way we can try to make an informed assessment before we make any decisions." Fortunately, they thought that was a good idea. Agreed, got in touch with the attorneys handling the case for the university, and made arrangements for us to drive up to their office in Colorado Springs to read the reports the next morning. On Sunday morning, we got together at about 10 a.m. and drove the 50 miles north to Colorado Springs to the attorney's office. The door was locked. But when we knocked, a young law clerk greeted us and ushered us into a huge, beautiful conference room. All the investigation materials were laid out for us on a big conference table. We sat down and each of us started reading reports. There were state and local police reports, sheriff department reports, state and local fire department reports, and state and local arson investigator reports, just to name a few. After about an hour of reading and several cups of coffee, we all came to the same conclusion. We never found out who set the fire. In fact, it's still a mystery. But we all realized that we couldn't take any chances. We figured out what we had to do and planned our strategy. It wasn't an easy decision, but it worked out in the end, and I spent 3 years in Pueblo. In reading the reports, though, we found that one of the suspects that I want to point out was totally cleared was a man who had been running in and out of the fire rescuing people. He was wearing a Nomex flight jacket along with Nomex gloves and a Nomex scarf and mask. The investigators thought he had a hero complex and had started the fire in order to be heralded as a champion. After all, why would someone have all this fire-resistant clothing available to them in a college dorm and then risk his own life to evacuate people from the fire? Apparently, this person had served a hitch in a U.S. Army aviation unit, and he was still enlisted through the Colorado National Guard in an artillery unit that worked with 8-inch howitzers. He kept all his gear in his dorm room so he could have access to it when and if he was called up for duty. So you may ask, what does this have to do with aviation, or the airplane geeks for that matter? That's a good question. Even for me, all this was ancient history, and I mean, I had completely forgotten about it. But then one night, while Launchpad and I were on the phone, he mentioned that he had attended college in Pueblo. He told me that during his last year in the dorm, there was a fire, at which point I shouted into the phone, "That was you?" And then all the memories flooded back. The name I read in the reports about the man in the Nomex was Marzari. He left the college a year before I arrived. But apparently, I've known Launchpad for some 36 years now, even though I've still never met him. And it took a long-distance phone call during the pandemic of 2020 to find out. And sure, while Launchpad flies a folk wolf, hosts great parties at Oshkosh, and can tell you more about a pipistrel than you could possibly imagine, he's also been an arson suspect, but turned out to be a hero. And even though we've never actually met in person, I'm very happy to call him my friend. For the Airplane Geeks, here in Portland, Maine, this is your main man, Micah.
Wow.
Nicely done. Right.
Yes.
Now there's the story.
Holy cow.
So, Launchpad, you got a light?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought that was just between you and me. Yeah. Wow.
Did you know that was coming, Launchpad?
Not at all.
Oh, wow. That is really impressive. It really is.
Wow. Yeah. On several levels.
Yeah, that happened exactly the way that I described it. And let me again point out, Launchpad was totally cleared on the whole thing all the way through. But, you know, but his name came up several times. And it's like, oh, my God, yeah. That was you. We're on the phone. Jeez.
Wow. Thanks for doing
that, Michael. I know that guy.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. And Launchpad, that sounds like you. That does sound like you.
Thank you. Yeah, I had a lot of, I still had flight gear. I'd already been commissioned and I had my flight gear with me. And, you know, I was just like, you know, to do the thing you need to do.
Yep. Yeah. Fantastic. I love it. I love it. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap up this episode. Unless anybody else has anything that they wanted to bring out about what's going on with them. I think we'll draw to a close here for this rather unique episode with you know, the gangs all here. There were one or two other folks that we were hoping to have join us, but I guess they were unable to. So we'll have to you know, do that another time. And we want to thank. Go ahead.
Before you say that, and before we go, I just want to say out loud, I hope everything's okay. I'm sure it is, but we really missed you, Aunt Benet.
Yes, yes. We were hoping Benet would be here. She was itching to get back in in with this group. Yeah, we'll have to try to make some arrangements, get her on the show sometime coming up in the not too distant future. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So thanks for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast, especially all of you who've been listening for years, and we know that there are many of you who have been listening for a long, long time. We really appreciate it. It quite frankly keeps us going. You know, to be associated with the community that's built, you know, around this show and just in aviation in general. So it's just really special. And a special shout out to those of you who made a personal donation to help keep this little thing going. I called it an experiment early on when Courtney and I first started. That's exactly what it was. As I recall the story, we said, well, it's... Let's go for three episodes, and if we still feel like doing it after three, you know, then we'll keep on going. But we'll give ourselves three episodes. And so another good news story that we didn't mention is that last year in 2020, we celebrated our 600th episode. So, you know, who knew?
And you forgot to mention that on that first episode, your guests were Wilbur and Orville Wright. So that was an epic episode.
I think we talked about the prototype Vision Jet, actually, on the first episode.
Really?
Yeah.
2008-ish?
2008.
That would have been it?
June 2008. I'm pretty sure the episode post includes a photo of that. And we talked about that. So,
looking forward to the guest on the 1,000th episode.
Oh my God! If I live that long. All right. Find us at airplanegeeks.com. Show notes there. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, especially if it's scrolled, you know, past, you're listening to this sometime in the future, you can just visit airplanegeeks.com/635. And, of course, our email is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. That's where you flip us an email if you'd like to join our Slack team. All right. Let's quickly tell folks I'm being waved at by Rob. Are you just saying hi, Rob? Or
You talked about flipping, and I was being rude.
You were being flipping. You were flipping.
I'm sorry. That was really uncalled for.
Totally, but
totally expected.
Yeah, that's
as in most of his comments, he was just being flippid.
Yes, that's right. Very, very good. You were going to ask something.
I was going to ask David where we can find him online.
I feel like a old school announcer holding my earphones up to one ear.
Yeah.
Well, that's because the other one's so inflamed. You can find me on Twitter, on Facebook,
on the UAV Digest on Fridays with Max Flight, on our Slack team, and I don't know, everywhere else in the universe. That's all.
All right. Max Trescott, where are you these days?
You can find me on Aviation News Talk podcast, wherever you get your podcast, or go to aviationnewstalk.com, click on contact at the top of the page, and shoot me an email.
And Rob Mark, where do we find you?
Certainly, you'll find me at jetwine.com, where Scott and I are creating incredible content. Just like the old days, we still pretty much just write it. But who knows? That might change sometime in the future. But also in between the pages at Flying Magazine.
Okay, good. Brian Coleman, is there a way to track you down?
There is, since I'm not being social and not on Slack, Twitter, Facebook, any of that stuff.
Good for you.
I still have the email address, brian@airplanegeeks.com.
And how about our main man, Micah?
Well, you can find me via email at micah@airplanegeeks.com, and you can follow me on Slack. And I'm not on Slack. I'm in the Slack room. I am in the Slack room, but on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at mainfly. That's M-A-I on M-A. Oh, my gosh. That's mainfly, M-A-I-N-E-F-L-Y, all one word. But if you really want to follow somebody on Twitter and find out what's going on in the aviation world, you need to follow Jet City Star. That's Isaac.
That's right. How about it, Isaac?
You can find me at Jet City Star on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Good. And Launchpad Marzari, how about you?
I'm on Facebook as Marzari and Launchpad Marzari. I'm on our Slack team, which I did really good this year, and I intend to do it. And I'm Pilot Launchpad on Twitter, but I'm not very good at Twitter. I'm not as big of a twit as Rob is yet.
Okay. But there's still time. There's still time. Yeah, you can find me. So I have something sort of new. You can find me at 30,000feet.com. That's all words, no spaces. And from there, you can find out where I am on Twitter and LinkedIn and everywhere else. 30,000feet.com was an aviation directory that I started in 1996. And it became a very popular and very large aviation directory. So, but that's a thing of the past. So I've cleaned out all of that stuff. And now it's just what Rob probably knows this. It's what they call a vanity page. So it's just my page. And you can find all the places where you can find me. So
hence, Wait a minute. Why would you assume that I would know everything about a vanity page?
I mean, well, you know, along with that, Rob, of Max here, Max says he's at 30,000 feet. And am I going to need to bring out my binoculars in order to see him?
Way up in the sky.
And he's fast, too.
Yeah, but Max, if I remember the story correctly, though, that's where Courtney actually found you to start the show.
Yeah.
Wasn't it he found you through the website?
Yeah, I think so. This was all started, well, it was before Google. You know, when there are things like Alta Vista and, you know, other search engines that don't exist any longer, but nobody knew how to use them. And it was really hard to find aviation resources. So, yeah, I started this thing and it became pretty big. I guess that put me on Courtney's radar screen somehow. And I had some blogs, too, at the time and a bunch of stuff that doesn't exist any longer. Ancient history. All right. Please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Oh, God, how's this going to work? Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Keep the blue side
safely.
Up.
So long.
Safe journey.
Frequency change approved.